Police searched Gacy's home and found the decomposed remains of three bodies in a dirt crawl space under the house.
Tomorrow marks 30 years since Johnny Gosch disappeared on his paper route.
I just killed my mom and my sister.
The city is preoccupied with the killer who in one note signed himself the Son of Sam.
The East Area Rapist, just when you thought the story couldn't get any worse.
Wrists and ankles chained, gagged, probably blindfolded.
We have an individual who apparently has the uncontrollable desire to kill.
It's Murder Monday on the Joe and Alex Show. Listener discretion is advised.
The reason we do Murder Monday is to bring attention to Crime Stoppers. They let you anonymously give tips on any unsolved crimes that might be going on in your area. Here's the number to call. 1-800-222-TIPS. That's 1-800-222-TIPS. Now, Alex, we're going to get into Murder Monday in just 1 second, but we have a special guest in studio. Who do we have next to you?
We do. Brandy is in studio this morning, and she actually brought three of her kids. Yes, three of her kids.
For Murder Monday?
To listen to Murder Monday. They're ages 9 and then 3. And what I wanted Brandy to talk to you about is why she thinks it's okay for her kids to listen to Murder Monday, and especially cases involving children, because I wanted to address something really quick this week before we get into the case, and that is we've gotten a couple emails. Just very minor few from a couple moms saying, like, you know, I don't like when you guys do these. I don't like Murder Monday, first of all. Second of all, I don't like when you do them and they're involving children. And I feel very strongly about doing cases that involve crimes against children, because children are the most vulnerable people in our society. And if no one is ever talking about these cases and how they happen and why they happen and why these people do what they do, how are we ever supposed to keep our children safe? And so I feel very passionate about doing crimes against children cases. A lot of people ask, what are my favorite types of murders to do for Murder Monday? And it's those, because I think that they help people the most. So Brandy, why do you feel like it's important for your kids to hear these?
I think it's important that they know it can happen to them.
That's right. So there you go. We're talking about Polly Klass this morning, and she is a 12-year-old girl who was abducted from a sleepover. So if you don't know, abductions involving a stranger are one of the hardest types of cases to solve. Even if you've witnessed an entire community helping, only 1/3 of these types of cases have a happy ending.
Well, that's not good.
So, for the story, it is a Friday night in Northern California on October 1st, 1993, and middle schooler Polly Klass has two of her best friends over for a sleepover. There's ice cream in the fridge, and the girls want to try to stay up all night. They play in Polly's bedroom, trying on Halloween costumes in preparation for the upcoming holiday. But like most 12-year-old girls, it's hard for them to keep the noise down. At about 9:45, Polly's mom, Eve, knocks on the door and nicely asks the girls to keep it down because she has a migraine and is going to try to go to bed early. Her room is right across the hall from Polly's, so she knows, although she told them this, that it'll probably only take a few minutes for the girls to get loud again. So she takes prescription sleeping pills to fall into a fast, uninterrupted sleep. The slumber party continues on for almost an hour before the girls' nightmare begins. Around 10:30, Polly opens her bedroom door to grab sleeping bags and sees a strange man standing right in front of her face.
What?
She screams. At first, her friends are giggling. They think it's like a joke or a prank. They're not sure how to react. But pretty quickly, they realize that Polly isn't laughing. And they notice the giant knife the man is holding in his hand. The man asks, "Whose house is it?" And he starts tying the girls up. He wants to know which of the girls live there and who else is in the house. The girls are terrified and crying. He says he's not going to hurt anyone and that he's only there for money. But when Polly tells him where her mom hides cash inside a jewelry box, he doesn't want to find it. He gags the girls and takes some pillowcases off some pillows to put over their heads. He tells Polly to get up and ask the other girls to count to 1,000. He says when they're done, Polly will be back. But he doesn't come back, and neither does Polly. They both disappear into the night. The girls immediately wake up Polly's mom and call the police. Investigators arrive within minutes. On the floor of Polly's room are binding materials and clothes cut into strips to tie people up. Investigators quickly realize that the amount of evidence they have is really pitiful. There just isn't anything solid for them to take. So they decide to take the whole rug off the floor just in case there's any evidence on it. The FBI quickly gets involved in Polly's case to offer their expertise, and they show up shortly after midnight. The FBI is able to immediately vet out that Polly's dad, Mark, has anything to do with her abduction, even though he and her mom are separated. And abductions from strangers are extremely rare and basically leave nothing for investigators to go on. A police sketch artist comes and interviews Polly's friends, Jillian and Kate, for 2 hours. The girls are understandably terribly upset, but are able to give a decent description to the artist of what this guy looked like. Time is of the essence, because in a child abduction case, every minute that goes by, a child is more likely to end up dead. The FBI's evidence response team is called to the class's house to see if they can find any more evidence using the most sophisticated forensic equipment available. After hours of meticulous searching, something finally shows up. It's a palm print on Polly's bed frame. It looked like the strange man who took Polly may have leaned against it just for a second while supporting himself to grab something. And that quick slip of the mind gives police the most important forensic evidence so far on Polly's case. In 1993, the FBI's fingerprint database didn't include palm prints, so they know that they can't identify someone based off of it, but that if they do catch someone soon, they can compare his palm print to this one, and then it'll be likely that he was there on the scene. Police start canvassing the community. They're sending search parties out looking for Polly, and investigators go door to door asking people if they had seen anything strange the night before. Turns out, lots of people had.
Really?
Multiple witnesses remember seeing a strange guy lurking around Polly's house and around her yard. The problem is, no one called the police. No one said anything. They just thought, maybe it's nothing. And they just let it go, even though there's some strange guy in her yard, on her porch, walking around looking in her windows. Could have been prevented.
To be fair, who doesn't look in other people's windows? I mean, come on.
So 48 hours later, Polly's dad gets a phone call. It sounds like Polly. She tells her dad that she's in a motel room somewhere, but then the line goes dead. It was the first glimmer of hope. Could she still be alive? Polly's dad's phone wasn't set up for a trace, so all authorities could do was wait for another call. And then it came. And this time, investigators were ready. It sounds like Polly again. She could only stay on the call a short time before hanging up, but this time, the FBI is able to make a trace. The call comes from a house 30 miles away, and they had to move fast, so there wasn't enough time to get an army of agents together. Polly was going to have to be rescued by only a few. Agents storm into the house and see two young girls sitting on the couch. Did they find Polly alive? I've got pictures of Polly and some very interesting pictures of her abductor that you're going to want to see as I get through the rest of this story. That's at Joe and Alex Show on Instagram. I also want you to please write in the comments, if you love Murder Monday, tell us why. Pavla just commented, my daughter is almost 11 and we always listen to Murder Mondays together as I drive her to school. I think it is so important for her and other children to know what can happen and how to react in situations like that. We're listening to the Polly story right now. So we left off with 12-year-old Polly Class from Northern California being abducted from a sleepover in her own home. She's been missing now for 48 hours, but after her dad received a second phone call from a young girl who sounded like Polly, FBI agents are able to trace the call. They race to this house and bust in the front door, which is 30 miles away, and they find two young girls sitting on the couch. But something isn't right. This was just a normal family home. A terrible realization dawns on the agents. After sitting down with one of the young girls in the house, the investigators quickly find out that she was the one who had made the calls after friends from school dared her to.
Oh my gosh.
There was no Polly or her abductor. When I was researching the story and I was watching some things on this case, I literally yelled. I said, are you kidding me? I was irate, and I can't imagine how her parents felt and how investigators felt because that is such an important lesson to teach your kids, too. When these types of stories are going on, like, you can't prank call the parents of a missing, presumed dead child and act like the child.
How many kids are actually doing this? This blows my mind. Like, back in the day, prank calls were so big. I remember prank calling people, but I don't think, hey, you missing your daughter? It's me!
It's horrible. But, like, the thing is that think of all the time that was wasted pursuing that lead.
And the hope that they had. Yes. They're like, let's get there 30 miles away, 25 miles away. We're almost 10 miles away.
It's just devastating. And so investigators are now even farther from finding the missing 12-year-old. For 2 months, the community police, the FBI, even the Navy is searching tirelessly for Polly.
Wow.
And then they finally get another break. On November 28th, 1993, a sheriff's deputy is called out to the house of a woman named Dana Jaffe, who owns a large piece of property. She says she found some things on her land that might be of use to investigators. She leads the deputy through a clearing just a few yards off the long, winding driveway to her house. Scattered in the woods was a large piece of silk cloth that had been fashioned into a hood. A couple strips of packing tape were on the ground, and a pair of young girls' tights had been tied, and a large chunk of human hair was in the knot. Then it occurs to Dana that about 2 months earlier, she had a run-in with a trespasser not far from where they were standing.
It all started when Dana's babysitter, Shannon Lynch, had left Dana's house and was making her way back down the long driveway. A man was walking down the middle of the private drive. His stranded Pinto was off to the side. He said that he was stuck and insisted that she get out of her car and help. He also wanted to know what was up the drive. But Shannon immediately sensed something wasn't right. She'd later describe him as looking like a wild man. She drove on, leaving him there, determined to get to a phone. Shannon found a payphone about 2 miles down the road and hurried to call her friend. She was anxious to get a hold of Dana and warn her of the scary man trespassing on her land. Dana didn't waste any time. She grabbed her daughter and a baseball bat and took off down the hill.
Dana for the win. So Dana's ready. She's like, I'm getting my kid. I'm getting out of this house. There's a weirdo on my property, and I'm getting a baseball bat, and I'm ready to throw some bows, okay? So I love Dana. So Dana sees this guy. As she's driving down her driveway, she sees the strange man her babysitter had described, but he was nowhere in sight. She sees his car, but no him. So she continues to drive to the police station, and two cops end up coming to her house and find now this guy back at his car, trying to get it unstuck, and they ask him what he's been doing. He says he's been out sightseeing and tried to turn around but got stuck and is just trying to get out. Now, keep in mind, it's dark outside. That should have been a red flag right there to the policeman, because people don't go sightseeing at night in the pitch black in the country roads where there's not even a street light.
Okay, you may not see as much, but I mean, depending on the moon, you might get a good view of the top of the trees.
It's just a huge red flag, which they did not address in the case. I picked up on that. Like, that's something as an investigator I would have said, why are you sightseeing at night? I would have challenged him on that because it doesn't make sense. There were bits of leaves and brush in his hair and alcohol in his breath, but he does pass a sobriety test and they can't find anything incriminating, so they let him get his car out and urge him to get off the property and let him go. The problem is that in 1993, police could only bring up and see if you had anything on your driving record. They could not, like, search and find out your criminal record. So there were a lot of things that this guy had on his criminal record that would have maybe given them the cause to question him more about, yeah, like, Polly, for example. But they didn't know any of that stuff because computers didn't have all that stuff yet. They let him go. The FBI gets a full report of this incident after learning about it, and they find out that the man police had spoken with is Richard Allen Davis. His criminal history reveals that he's been recently paroled after an 8-year sentence for kidnapping, had been arrested on robbery charges, another kidnapping, attempt to commit rape, and a couple of counts of assault with a deadly weapon. His arrest photo on file matched Polly's friend's description they had given to the forensic sketch artist. After evidence specialists looked at the items found on Dana Jaffe's property, they were able to determine that it was highly likely Polly Klass had been there 2 months earlier with Richard Allen Davis. Authorities find out that Richard has a warrant out for his arrest for violating parole, and they're able to find him after he's pulled over during a traffic stop. They tell him that he's under arrest, and Polly's friends are brought to a lineup and immediately identify Richard as the man who had taken their friend Polly. Davis's palm print is quickly matched to the one taken from Polly's bedroom. Investigators cheer and throw their papers with a huge sigh of relief. Polly's abductor was finally caught. He tells investigators that he had been looking for his mom's house that night that Polly went missing and got lost. He ends up buying some pot and then drank some beers, and he gets really buzzed where he comes across Polly's house after wandering her neighborhood aimlessly. He finds an open window and hears girls talking inside. That's when he picks up a knife in the kitchen, and he says he doesn't remember anything after that.
He claimed the next thing he knew, he was driving in his car and was surprised to find a young girl sitting next to him. She was complaining that her hands were tingling. According to Davis, he adjusted the straps for her and drove around wondering what he had done and what he should do next. Then he drove off the side of the road and got the car stuck. Once he realized he was stuck for good, he says he got Polly out of the car and carried her up a steep embankment about 30 yards away. He planned to leave her in the darkness until he could figure out a way to free the car. The rest of Davis's story about what happened at Pythian Road matched the witnesses' accounts. At the time of the incident, the bulletin about Polly's abduction was just going out over police radios, but the deputies were tuned to a different frequency and would not have heard it even if they had been in their cars. They ran his license, but the equipment they had at that time was only able to give a cursory printout of Davis' driving record. It couldn't generate his criminal record. They found nothing they could hold him on. Davis recalled how the deputies pulled his car out and escorted him to the main highway, but he claims that he waited for 15 or 30 minutes and returned to the site to find Polly. Then he just drove around. At some point, he realized he had to get rid of her. At long last, authorities had found out what they'd been desperate to know. Polly Klass was dead, and Richard Allen Davis was the man responsible.
Oh my gosh, like all those things, like just off by a hair. Like
yep.
They couldn't have heard it if they would have heard it on the right channel.
Yep, because they were standing right
there.
She
was there at the same time.
I'm a little aggravated that this Dana lady did not put two and two together when there's a wild manhunt going on trying to find this child. Why she wouldn't think, oh yeah, remember that time on the night that she was abducted that there was like a weird guy on my property that I had to call the police over?
Yeah.
Remember that? Like, why did that not click? That was frustrating for me. But eventually Richard takes investigators to an abandoned field where they do find Polly's body. Oh. It looked like she had been strangled. After a long, tumultuous trial, Davis was convicted on June 18th, 1996, of first-degree murder in four special circumstances, robbery, burglary, kidnapping, and a lewd act on a child in Polly Klass's death. A San Jose jury decided on a verdict of death for him, by the way. At his formal sentencing by a judge, Davis provoked national outrage by taunting Polly's family. He gave both middle fingers to everybody and to a courtroom camera, which you can see this photo on Instagram at Joe and Alex Show, and later said that Klass's last words just before he killed her were that her father molested her. So he's just an evil, awful
person.
Yeah,
sicko.
The judge sentenced Davis to death by lethal injection and said, "It is very easy for me to pronounce this sentence, given your revolting behavior in this courtroom." Davis is currently on death row at San Quentin State Prison. He survived an apparent drug overdose while in prison and attacks on him by several other prisoners, so now he's in solitary confinement. What I love, to end this on sort of a positive note, what I love about what happened since Polly's case, is that through this, so many other missing kids that have been saved from her case, because a lot of different pieces of legislation have been passed to help missing children cases, but also things that her parents keep on her website that can help parents and children in case something like this ever happens to your child. So if you go to polyclass.org, that is Polly, K-L-A-A-S.org, there are resources to help you stop the sex trafficking of minors and more, plus what to do if your child or kid goes missing. And what I really like that they have are child safety kits you can buy that keep track of your child's DNA, allow you to get their fingerprints, a most recent photo of them, and more, so that in case you were to have something happen to your kid, you can provide the police with all these crucial things that can really help them find them a lot faster. So you should always have those things ready in order, in case something like that happened. And they also have a game that they can teach you how to play with your kids called the What If game that helps you walk them through different what if scenarios at any age to help them establish certain brain patterns that can kick in if they're ever needed, if your kid is ever in that situation. So, you know, what if you're walking home from school and a man comes up to you and asks you to help him find his puppy? What are you going to do? And
no!
This website,
get away!
This website walks you through how to help your child deal with the situations. It's very important.
Was that right? The right answer?
I know that there are some parents that don't want their kids to know any of this stuff happens. I think kids need to know this stuff happens. I will maintain that till the day that I die. So anyway, this has been the Polly Klass story. You can see the photos. And please tell us why you love Murder Monday on Instagram at Joe and Alex Show.